live from Holcomb Farm in West Granby. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're inside the CSA barn on a beautiful, crisp, early autumn morning, and we're here for our harvest show. Holcomb Farm is our location for a few reasons. It is a CSA farm, that's short for Community Supported Agriculture, and we'll be talking about that model today. Holcomb Farm is also a piece of preserved working farmland in a region of our state that has expanded into suburbs pretty quickly. We'll be talking about preserving open space as well. This place also has a mission of growing food for needy residents of the greater Hartford area. But we're really here today because this is a piece of land I know really well. It's where I've been getting my fresh vegetables every growing season for the last decade or so. My friends have worked on this land, and I feel a deep connection to Holcomb Farm and the food it provides. This fertile valley produces vegetables that explode with flavor, and the top chefs in the area know it too. Chris Prosperi was here before. Our friend from Metro Beast and Simsbury and the Food Schmooze on WNPR, he gets his vegetables here. So we've gathered with some folks from the Holcomb community and the Granby area to talk about growing food in Connecticut. And if you're around here, I hope you can join us today. We're going to start talking a bit about the history of Holcomb Farm with Bill Bentley, who's a former board president, a friend of Holcomb Farm. He knows the history of this place as well as anyone. And Bill, welcome to our show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, John.
So this is a pretty old farm. This has been around for quite some time, huh?
It has. It's been operating as a farm since probably the 1750s.
Since the 1750s, growing food all that time, huh?
Well, food and other crops. It at one time was a major tobacco farm. It has been a major dairy farm. The old barn here is just an absolute model of a mid-30s dairy barn.
And this place for the last several years has been operated as a CSA. Maybe you can talk about the latest iteration of this place and how it turned into the Holcomb Farm we have today.
Well, when Tudor and Laura Holcomb passed away, they willed their farm to the University of Connecticut, and the university was going through the problem so many land grants have of being farm poor and weren't able to keep it up. So Mark Winnie, who was then head of the Hartford Food System, started talking with the university about doing a farm here to provide food for the Hartford Food System. The talks broke down because the university couldn't put the money into the place that was needed. Then after the town received the farm, the conversations began again. Mark designed the farm to provide food for Hartford Food System and then added the CSA idea for two reasons. One was to get the scale he needed to keep his costs in line. And two, it fit the broader mission of the Hartford Food System of getting all kinds of people to eat nutritious food.
And so growing food for the people of the region is one of the things that we're going to be talking about here in this first section of the program. And before we get into that, though, maybe we can talk about who owns the farm. This is actually a place that is owned by the town of Granby itself.
That's right. And they've owned it since the transfer, which I think occurred in 1991.
So the town owns it, but who runs it? Is the town vehicles out here making sure this place runs okay, or how's this work?
Well, there is a transition. Over most of that period of time, a nonprofit, which started off as Friends of Holcomb Farm, provided the ongoing maintenance ownership role and developed the CSA and various other things in cooperation with the Hartford Food System. But today, the town is providing all that overhead kind of services and has much improved things like the parking lot and the roads and so forth.
So I want to bring into the conversation Karen Pettinelli, who's the farm manager at Holcomb Farm here in West Granby. She's our host today. Karen, good to see you. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks, John, for coming here.
Well, I know that one of the reasons you came here is because of this mission, this fresh access mission. Tell me a bit about what brought you here.
Bill Bentley has a lot to do with it, who you just heard from. He very convincingly sold this farm to me over a phone conversation, the mission of it. And the CSA, the first farmer I worked for had worked here as his first CSA that he managed. And so I'd heard of Holcomb Farm for my entire farming career, and then having Bill on the phone telling me all these amazing things about it really, kind of sealed the deal.
And the idea is, and we're going to be talking more about the CSA model coming up later on in the program, is that CSAs are booming. They're all over New England. But a place like this that has as its primary mission growing food for needy people is something that really drew you in, and maybe something that's a little different. It's a unique place.
Yeah, it is, definitely. The CSA movement, like you said, they're popping up everywhere now, which is great. And I think originally a lot of CSAs did come from the idea of just trying to feed people and, you know, feed families, people who could pay for it and people who couldn't. And this farm combines those ideas. It really, being the first CSA in Connecticut, it has that historical orientation that a lot of farms don't.
I want to bring in Piper Dumont, who is the program officer for Holcomb Farms Fresh Access Program. Good to see you, Piper. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for coming.
Well, tell us a little bit more about this program. What does Fresh Access do?
So Fresh Access, we work with community organizations in the greater Hartford area who are already deeply embedded sort of with communities who to help with advocacy and to sort of help provide services. And so we've partnered with them to get them fresh food weekly. We give them 150 pounds a week, which they then distribute to folks who are food insecure. And over the course of a season, we get over 6 tons of produce to over 1,300 people.
Wow, so that's an awful lot of produce. And the major recipients of all this great produce is who? Who's getting this stuff?
So it depends on our community organization. So we have a relationship. Actually, right now, the Granby Senior Center just pulled up to get their share. And so we work with them, and we realize that seniors are a community that is often overlooked, and they are often working on a fixed income, and especially in sort of the changing nature economically and things that are going on, that can be tough, and they're having to make choices about healthcare costs, heating costs, and food costs. And so we're hoping to supplement with nutritious produce the best we can. We also work with a food share, so we distribute to a local food bank. And we work with the Hartford Food System, who's also here with Roger. And some of our produce goes into his CSA, which is a sliding scale CSA in Hartford. And we work with the Hispanic Health Council. And that's fantastic because they do a lot of nutrition programming and culinary education. And so a lot of our food gets sort of brought into the work that they're doing. And so we've had programs where they work with high schoolers and we're teaching them how to cook. And then those high schoolers went and worked with younger students in Bridgeport and taught them how to cook. And sort of talking about those experiences of the pride they had, and also these kids who have never had a salad before.
Yeah, one of the things, that idea of kids never having a salad before, mm-hmm. Food insecurity is not just about people not getting fresh food. It's about not having fresh food for such a long time that you don't really know what to do with it. So that education piece is huge. When you get farm fresh produce, but it just sits there because you don't know how to actually present it to anyone, it doesn't really help you at all.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I'm really excited about is I'm working with the Granby Senior Center right now and our local culinary arts program, and we're going to figure out how we can sort of link those two for exactly that reason. There's a knowledge gap that we need to deal with, and people are increasingly disconnected from their food, but also from, I think, forms of knowledge that we really took for granted that generationally have been lost as we haven't had access to fresh food or haven't had access to the opportunities to try and prepare it. And so it can be intimidating. Getting a bag of kohlrabi is not necessarily helpful if you don't know what to do with kohlrabi.
Yeah. Maybe later on the program you can tell people what to do with kohlrabi, because I'm
absolutely
still not sure I know.
There are many very interesting things to do with kohlrabi.
Piper Dumont, she's program officer for Holcomb Farms Fresh Access Program. Thank you so much, Piper. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Now you mentioned Roger Phillips, who's here from the Hartford Food System. Grow Hartford is one of the recipients of Fresh Access Produce. He, of course, also runs his own CSA we'll be talking about in a bit. Roger, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us about how you work with Holcomb Farm to get food out to people.
Well, Grow Hartford's existed for 10 years as a program of Hartford Food System, and we've always had a strong connection with Holcomb Farm for years. For our inner city garden plots, we'll start our transplants here at the greenhouses at Holcomb Farm. So we have a nice table that we use every year to start our seedlings. But we use the Fresh Access produce that we get here in a variety of our programs at Hartford Food System. One of them is our Grow Hartford CSA program, where we offer shares to everybody in the community who's interested, whether they're low income or not. We wanted to have a CSA that was accessible to people in Hartford. I think that there's a lot of low income people who might benefit from the benefits of being in a CSA, but just can't afford, the $550 in January to when they don't even know where they're going to be in June or July, or where their next you know, paycheck is coming from. So we make it easy for low-income families to participate in our CSA program. And we also do, speaking of the educational component, we also have a community kitchen, the North Hartford Community Kitchen at the Community Center in the north end of Hartford, where we do cooking classes, and everybody leaves at the end of the day with basically a bag of food that they can go home and make that what they've learned to make that day for their family.
Do you see a growing need in the Hartford area for food for people?
I think there is a growing need, but there's also a growing interest. We do sell produce that we grow in the city at the North End Farmers Market. And I've definitely noticed an uptake in people who are asking a lot of questions about different varieties. And they, you know, they've tried kale. They've put it in a smoothie. They want to try a different variety. So,
well, kale's hot now. Everyone's talking about kale.
That's true.
5 years ago, farmers were like, here's some kale. And people are like, I don't know what the hell to do with this. But now everyone wants kale.
Yeah, that's right.
This is a new big thing. I want to bring in quickly George Krivda, who's Legislative Program Director for the State Department of Agriculture, who's good enough to join us here on the farm today. George, good to see you. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for having me, John.
So I'm wondering if maybe you can talk for a moment about the Department of Agriculture's role in all of this, because farms in the state provide so many different things. Obviously, we talk about open space preservation. We talk about jobs. We talk about, you know, actual products that Connecticut makes that gets out to the world, but I think it's also really important to figure out how we're going to feed people who need food. What is the agriculture department's role in all this?
Well, John, the department, under the leadership of the Commissioner of Agriculture, Steve Ravitsky, and the governor, do quite a bit to support farms and support the whole system that delivers food to people, both needy and otherwise. We participate with grants to farmers, viability grants, all types of situations, helping farmers come into the more present means of both production and distribution. We work hard with the regional market in Hartford to provide a place for farmers to wholesale their food. And in the bigger picture of food for the needy, the Food Share organization has offices there, and when all this wholesale food comes into the market, we end up having quite a bit that goes over to Food Share. I don't know how many tons a month just go into the system with various kitchens. In addition, farmers, traditionally being community-based people, have always lent a hand to people in need, and they open their fields to gleaners, which is a biblical term when you leave some stuff on the plants because it's just no longer advantageous to you to bring it to the market, you give it to people so that it doesn't go to waste.
Well, and Karen, maybe you can talk, though, about this balance that you have to have, feeding all these people. It's been the long-standing tradition of this farm, but also, of course, running a CSA, needing to run it as a business that actually you're able to make enough money to run it again next year. How do you keep all these things straight to make sure you're growing enough food, not too much food, and you're able to use it all?
Well, I try my best to control that, of course, but the weather dictates it mostly. We do our best. We try and use our acreage to our best ability to use it for sustainable purposes and put in a cover crop and then maximize the rest of the acreage for production. And so we grow basically as much as we can on the acres that aren't being rested. And then the beauty of a CSA really is that, you know, if you're there that year on the boomer year, you're going to get all that excess. And the same with Fresh Access, they'll get more produce that year. And then on a less, you know, less great production year, that's the year we ask our CSA members to be understanding, and Fresh Access too. We'll ask them to be understanding, and, you know, yeah, we can't do it every year, the amazing year. So, but yeah, it requires a lot of planning to try and get at least everybody, you know, satisfied.
We'll be talking in a couple of minutes about what's in your CSA share this year, what's growing well. We'll be asking a bit about that. We're broadcasting from West Granby's Holcomb Farm today. It's our harvest program. We're talking to some of the people who grow our food and getting food out to the needy. Before I take a break, Bill Bentley, this farm, as we said, has been around for a while, about 350 acres or so. You have been part of this community for a long time. You feel pretty good about the future of Holcomb Farm right now?
Oh, yes. I first came to Granby in 1990, and Holcomb Farm is a much more viable and important part of this community in the greater Hartford region now than it ever has been. And I am particularly pleased with how Fresh Access is developing. I think the work that Piper is doing and many of the collaborative organizations is making that an ever more important part of why this farm exists.
Well, Bill Bentley, a longtime friend, former board president of Friends of Holcomb Farm, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Now, when we come back, we're going to be talking with some other CSA farmers. We're going to be getting some thoughts from our audience here as well. Come on by if you're in the Granby area. We're in West Granby at Holcomb Farm, and this is Where We Live. Live from Holcomb Farm in West Granby, Connecticut, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Connecticut has dozens of farms that work on the CSA, or Community Supported Agriculture, model. Each one is different, but the idea is simple. CSA members share an upfront cost for the food they'll get for the coming year. That money goes into paying the farmer, paying for supplies, and harvesting the food. That means the members share in the risk and the bounty. We're joined by some farmers who work in the CSA world as we broadcast live from one of the great CSAs in the state, Holcomb Farm. Karen Pettinelli is here. She's farm manager of Holcomb Farm in West Granby. They are our hosts today. We also heard from Roger Phillips, who himself is a farmer with Subedge Farm in Farmington and Avon, and we'll be talking with him in a moment. And I want to welcome in Jonathan Janeway and Charlotte Ross. They are farmers with Sweet Acre Farm in Hampton. Welcome, Jonathan and Charlotte. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So maybe you can tell us, guys, about your farm. Where exactly? First of all, I don't even know where Hampton is. Tell us where Hampton is.
It's about an hour northeast of Hartford, so heading up towards Putnam and Pomfret.
Okay, so tell us about your farm.
Well, it was started on 1 acre in Mansfield for our first two seasons, and we moved to Hampton for this third. It's now 1.5 acres, so we're fudging a little bit by being Sweet Acre.
Sweet Acre and a half farm.
And it's diversified vegetables is the bulk of what we do, and we've expanded into small-scale livestock over the years as we learn. So chickens, pigs, 2 goats that are just pets, really, and layers and meat birds are the chickens.
And so this is a different sort of model than the farm that we're on right now. This is land that you don't own, mm-hmm. but this is land that you're essentially leasing. And hopefully you have a different plot of land next year, or the same plot of land, or a bigger plot of land. How does that work?
Right. It's kind of, well, let me say, we've benefited from a lot of generosity in the ag community in Eastern Connecticut, and we've never wanted for land. There's always been someone offering a field to us, and that's been wonderful getting our start. There is a huge benefit to owning your own land because you start to make infrastructural investments and just decisions that are long-term, that are good for business and good for your soil. And so we look forward to that. And, yeah, do you have anything to speak to?
Yeah, well, we're it's an ongoing process of trying to figure out where that next step is going to be. Yeah, we're right in the midst of it, so we don't really know where we're going to be next year, but we are planning on farming. And
so how do you get a CSA going at the scale you guys are talking about? Because I'm going to talk to Karen and Roger in just a moment about the model they have. But this is interesting. I mean, you need to get to a certain number of people to pay into your idea, and you need to get them food. So tell us about setting this up.
Well, when we started our first season, we didn't have a CSA model. We were new kids in town, so no one really knew us. So it was something we started in our second season through our markets, and this was a way a farm we worked for up in Maine ran their CSA. They were remote to all their markets, so people bought in shares, anything over $100 that were redeemed at market. There wasn't any boxing up of shares. It was sort of free choice at the market, shop as you would, and you get a little bonus for paying up front. So that's how we've run it, and the amount of money we get in CSA shares is not, you know, a huge percentage of what we make or hope to make in the course of a season, so we don't worry about, you know, overextending ourselves with the CSA, but it is very helpful in January and February to have a little bit of income stream then.
So you're signing up people now, Charlotte. You're trying to get people in the middle of the winter to buy into what you're doing in the spring.
Right, and that critical income comes between January and March. June, right.
And June, all throughout the year. So Karen, tell us about the CSA here. How is it maybe a little different than what we just heard from the Sweet Acre folks?
Well, we rely less on alternative forms of income. We're pretty much a CSA model. We do some wholesale, but it's very small percent of our income. So we have a lot more pressure definitely in the winter to get our shares signed up and know how much money we'll have to start the spring.
So every winter time, you're essentially asking the people who were with you last time to sign up once again. And is that ever a hard sell? I mean, basically what you're doing is you're asking them to take a bet. You're saying, if you give me a couple hundred dollars, I'll grow you food next year. But that's really that's the deal.
Yeah, there's a lot of trust in that relationship. And so I try and stress the fact that really their money's going to support the farm, going to keep the farm operating, and the vegetables are just a bonus.
The vegetables are just a bonus. But it's interesting because one of the things that CSAs and just really local farms are able to do is give you incredibly fresh, excellent produce. You know the farmer, and it's right next door. But it's not like going to the local market and just picking out whatever. I mean, you come that week, and if you said before, you got kohlrabi, you're going to eat kohlrabi that week. And so is that ever difficult to sort of get that idea through to people?
Yes, it definitely is. I realized this spring that what we really need are farmer mentors. We need people kind of creating a new relationship with their food, and you need guidance in that process in order for this model to work and to keep farms alive in this way. So I'm working on becoming a farmer mentor as well as a farmer.
A farmer mentor. I like this idea. Roger Phillips is here, and we heard from you before as part of your work with Hartford Food System, but you're a farmer as well, and you're looking to start a CSA model-type farm next year, right?
Yes, I am, with my wife, Isabel, and my kids. We're starting our own family farm that's going to be strongly community-based, and it's going to be in Farmington and Avon on land there leased from the town.
And what's it called?
It's called Sub-Edge Farm, and it's at the historic Fisher Farm in Farmington and Avon.
So how are things going to be different for you next year? I mean, what are the challenges to setting up your own CSA and going in with your family? It sounds like there's a lot going on here.
There's a huge amount of planning that we've, you know, already actively been involved in. And just starting a business is a crazy thing to do anyway. But the thing that's kept us going is just a huge amount, again, of community support. Like, people seem to be very excited about the opportunity of having a CSA farm in their neighborhood, in their backyard, that they can be actively involved in. So we've had a lot of really great support that keeps us going.
Now, of course, one of the things about farming is you have to rely on the weather. And we always talk about New England weather being very changeable. Charlotte, I mean, what's been good this year? What's maybe not done so well? I mean, you're hoping always for a great growing season, but you know that throughout the course of the year, some things are going to take off and some things aren't. What's worked?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge benefit to being diversified vegetable farmers and just diversified in all of what you're doing on your farm. But because when the pak choy bolts, you're not a pak choy farmer, so that's great, you know. You're kind of sad about that, but you move on. The beginning of half of the season was so wet, and we just had, it was just tons of rain and things. You know, we were getting to know this field, and that's a difficulty about farming other people's fields, is that by the end of the season, you really know what you should do the next year, but perhaps you're moving on at that point. So,
yeah.
But yeah, the rain washed out a lot of nutrients. We lost a lot of greens. We lost, and then it got super hot in July and lost a lot of greens again. the eggplant, peppers, and tomatoes loved it. And the fall has just been beautiful, or the late summer, early fall has been gorgeous. So we've really, I feel like it's a whole other season, the second half. And so yeah, it's balanced out. I think there were some losses at the beginning, and things are coming in strong now. So,
okay, Karen, how about you? What's it been a good year for and a poor year for?
I'm with you on the greens. It's been really sad. As we were saying, people usually get too many greens in a CSA, and this year everyone's like, where's the kale? You know, so yeah, not so good on that front. But yeah, our tomatoes have been great, and our fall crops are looking really good because, I mean, yeah, the rain has finally cleared up. We're having some dry weather, and it's cool, and it's been a really cold year, really, overall. And so our fall crops, rutabaga, everyone's really excited about that, I'm sure.
But this is the thing I learned. I was talking to you about this. You can eat the rutabaga tops. They're really mm-hmm. good greens, too. You don't have yep. to throw away those tops. See, this is what farmers love to hear. Is anybody who will eat the stuff that nobody wants? Those are the perfect, perfect customers for the CSA. We're actually at a CSA a barn right here at Holcomb Farm in West Granby. We're talking about the community-supported agriculture model. We'll be talking with some members of the Holcomb community in just a moment. We've got some farmers on our panel right now. I also want to bring back in George Krivda from the State Department of Agriculture. I know that CSAs are really booming. I was taking a look on the website, George. It seems like there's a couple dozen at least CSAs in the state. There might be even more than that. It's a big thing right now.
Many, many more than that, John. The government doesn't really regulate CSAs, so what we see are all different models, different hybrids and combinations, farmers working with each other. Some farmers really don't want or like the marketing aspect of what they do, so CSAs and other farmers step forward and handle that for them. The phenomenon has just continued, and we see different models every year. Folks, and in addition to that, you've seen a larger and more diverse group of crops that have come forward. You know, when you've got 20 weeks that you've got to put a basket together for, you start thinking hard about how that's going to work, and you start bringing in things that folks haven't really seen before and including it in baskets, and then the challenges, as you said earlier, I'll have to admit right now, I don't know what to do with kohlrabi. But if I was with the CSA that provided it, with that was most likely a recipe and how to prepare it. So there's been a large group of new and different vegetables and produce that it's worked its way into the marketplace because of that. And then other folks have come forward, and they might not be farmers, but they're aggregators, and they put together local food from all over the region. And then a further development is that you don't necessarily have to go with a CSA that just gives you what's available that week. You can pick and choose what you want. So I know this morning as I left my house, I stepped over the box from the CSA that I belong to. And, you know, it's always a pleasant surprise to see something and you say, I've never tried that before. I'm looking forward to it.
What's the CSA you belong to?
So Fresh, that's an organization out of Middletown area. They collect different organic produce from, I guess, more than just the state of Connecticut. I know very early in the year, the earliest yellow squash I saw came from a greenhouse out of Massachusetts that was organic. So,
well, you work with the legislature. I know something that's been in the legislature over the course of the last couple of years, and maybe you can explain some of the legal changes, is, you know, we've been talking about growing vegetables, but growing livestock in Connecticut has kind of changed. The ability for local farmers to bring things like birds to market is something that's changed over the last couple of years. What can you tell us about that, about you know, the fact that we might be able to see more local pigs and sheep and birds available in our markets as well?
Well, our first, where we've been most successful initially is with poultry. And most recently, the governor asked the department to take action to get more local poultry into supermarkets and into restaurants. The concept being that you start to develop a market, people start to recognize that they have an option of getting a more locally produced product. So poultry has been the first step. We're in the process now of working to develop a mobile poultry processing unit, which will be able to travel to various farms and allow farmers to process their own poultry and then work out. The model is that they need to develop a personal relationship with a local grocer. So there's no middleman, the farmer to the grocer to the home. And it's a little bit more of a challenge when you start to get to larger animals. There's all types of incidental issues with being able to compost the offal that's produced in the slaughter of the animal, and the big stumbling block is the inspection process, because it needs to be federally inspected, a USDA representative there, and that adds to the cost. And until you can get to some serious numbers in terms of your break-even point, that becomes a challenge. But now the governor's office has taken interest with a mobile livestock processing unit, which will add a number of new challenges to the department. But it's all good, and it's all about bringing fresh local produce and meats to your home, and just an abundance of fresh vegetables. I know when I was growing up, John, it was all canned vegetables and somewhat frozen vegetables that were on our table, but now it's all fresh that we have in our home. So,
and because of these people we're talking with right now, Jonathan Janeway, getting into this idea of growing meat for food for people, how difficult has that step been for you guys trying to get into that world as well?
We've been below the radar. I'm sort of getting awkward right now. So, I think, everything we've done has been in such small quantities that, and all our customer bases are people who we see every week. Like, we don't, you're talking about selling to a grocer and then home, but these are going directly to the people who are going to be eating them. And the quantities that we produce are in much higher demand than we can produce. So,
yeah, it seems as though there is a demand for this stuff. I mean, there really is a demand for not just local vegetables. Here at Holcomb Farm and the farm store, they sell meat products from all over the state, actually all over Massachusetts as well. And it's something that the people seem to really want.
Yeah, and it's the demand is there, and I think for small producers, we come up against a lot of different stumbling blocks than bigger producers and trying to figure out what that break-even point is, and the issue of getting grain for your chickens and pigs. It's grass-based livestock can be easier for smaller farms, but we run into all sorts of logistical problems of trying to produce the little that we do produce. So.
Karen, what are some of the other big challenges for farming in this region? I mean, we have obviously not a whole lot of space, because a place like Connecticut is very tightly, densely packed. There's an awful lot of people here. We've always heard about the rocky New England soil. I mean, is it hard to grow good food here, or is it actually, a really good place to be a farmer?
Well, I think we grow the most amazing food here, to tell you
the truth. I would agree with you. But,
but yes, it is challenging for sure. I mean, in the olden days, I guess people had these large sprawling farms around their houses, and everything was right there, and you had your 10 kids to help you, and now we're all in the modern world, and it is harder to make the income you need to live in states such as like Connecticut or Massachusetts, where there is a big demand for vegetables. And not just that, we drive all over town to our fields, which makes it, you need trucks, there's all sorts of extra infrastructure you need to do that. And I know farms that, they'll drive 30 minutes on their tractors to, fields that are all over town. But we're really passionate about it, so we keep doing these crazy things. Basically farmers are finding a way to make it work. Rocks, they have babies.
Yeah, lots and lots of rocks. Roger, what do you see as some of the big challenges here?
Well, I think that especially for new and beginning farmers like myself, I think land access is probably one of the big ones. I work with a number of new and emerging farmers around the state and know a lot of them, and I think that's probably it. I mean, land is expensive to buy. So, the kind of options that we've been looking for and what we landed on was, municipally owned property that we were able to lease, and it's a beautiful property. And it's a great opportunity, but those opportunities are slim and few and far between. So, there's upstate New York, there's lots of land out there that's not too expensive, but there's not that market that we have here. So there's that choice between, a lot of farmers, I think young beginning farmers are leaving Connecticut because they're going to work on farms that are in Western Massachusetts or in Vermont or, upstate New York. So that's that's one of the big challenges I think that we need to think about and address.
As we hear about young farmers leaving the state, Charlotte, why did you guys decide to do this? I mean, tell us more about the story of why you decided that this was going to be what you're going to do.
Oh, it was kind of like an addiction. I wish I had a great story about it, but we worked at the harvest season on Hall's Organic Farm in Simsbury right out of college because we weren't doing anything better. And then we just, we moved to Boston. We did a few other things in between that and now. but they always had to do with gardens and ripping up people's backyards wherever we were renting. And it was just so exciting, you know, to see things growing and eat your own food and really feel like you were doing that for yourself. And then we went up to Maine and apprenticed for a season and came back and decided we just wanted to be, you know, where our family was and where we grew up. And again, I mean, there's a market here. There is. There's not a lot of land, and it's quickly being eaten up by other things. But there's a lot of people, and it's really kind of, I feel like, the tip of the iceberg in Connecticut, this local food movement. Like, we're really, people are just starting to get there. I mean, there are a lot of people who've been a part of it for a while, but I think as a mainstream, very public thing, farmers markets and finding your local farmer and talking with them about what they're doing seems to be something that people are really excited about, and it's pretty new still, especially compared to a state like Maine, you know, where that's been going on for a long time. They're really ahead of the curve. So,
well, when we come back from our break, we're going to be talking a bit more about farmers markets as well. It's where a lot of people buy their fresh produce, talking more about open space preservation, and we're going to be getting some comments from our audience here. We are broadcasting live today from Holcomb Farm in West Granby. It's the CSA that I belong to. It's community-supported agriculture. It's a great place that grows great food. Hopefully you can stop by in this last segment of our program as we continue to talk with the people who grow our food here on Where We Live. Live from Holcomb Farm in West Granby, this is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking today with some people who grow our food and some of the people who support a farm like Holcomb Farm. It's a beautiful farm that's located in West Granby, and it's been growing food for hundreds of years for the people of the greater Hartford area. It has a program called Fresh Access that helps to support many needy families in and around the greater Hartford area. It also works on the CSA model, community-supported agriculture. We're talking today with some farmers who work on CSAs. We're talking with Charlotte Ross and Jonathan Janeway from Sweet Acre Farm in Hampton. We're also talking with Karen Petinelli, who's the farm manager of Holcomb Farm in West Granby. Roger Phillips is a farmer from Subedge Farm in Farmington and Avon. He also works with Grow Hartford. We're going to be maybe getting some comments and thoughts from our audience in just a moment. I also have with us now George Krivda. Just quickly, George, from the State Department of Agriculture, open space preservation is really, really important. It's something that has been invested in by the state over the course of the last few decades. Maybe you can talk just briefly about the state of preserving places like this to actually grow vegetables and food for people, as opposed to, you know, putting another subdivision on.
Sure. Well, we have a very vibrant farmland preservation program in the state. Our director, a fellow named Joseph Dipple, is the longest serving director of a program like that in the country. And our program has been a model for many other states. So I don't know off the top of my head right now how many farms that we've preserved in the state, but it's well into the hundreds. And we work to try to build clusters of agricultural areas, because then you start to develop the infrastructure that farmers need. The veterinarians, the sales folks, the tractor repair folks, they all need to be in the area for economies of scale. So we work very hard to do that. And there's a constant challenge in the state of Connecticut, because there are many competing interests. And, you know, one of the great things about farms for developers is that they're flat. And consequently, their development costs are down, so it makes that land the most desirable to develop. So we work very hard to preserve the best of the best land in Connecticut. And a recent challenge that we face now is the competition for energy, and that some of our farmers are being approached by folks who are building energy, solar facilities, et cetera. And of course, once again, they're flat and they're open and they have a wide vista, so the panels are easy to track the sun and without any interruption. And now that's the latest competing interest for farmland in the state.
Well, you mentioned supporting the infrastructure for farmers. I'll just quickly ask about supporting the farmers market infrastructure, because for some of our farmers here, like the folks from Sweet Acre, I mean, they have a real foothold in the farmers market world. That's how people have many times their very first connection with locally grown food. I know that farmers markets have really exploded across the state. Maybe you can talk to us a bit more about how they're growing.
We have over 140 farmers markets around the state, and they break down into different types of markets. It's a wonderful democratic exercise in that each farmers market has a governing board that makes the rules for their market. And we oversee it all and get information to them and try to solve problems, et cetera. But they have this wonderful dynamic situation, usually locally based. Local farmers are in those markets. Gives the people an opportunity to know your farmer, which helps you know your food more. And so the department works very hard to make that flourish. And there's like in every, it's a big family, and in every family there's people who elbow each other and try to get a better place in the market, et cetera. And some folks, one of our most challenging problems or challenges, should say, not problems, with farmers markets is folks bringing in food from out of state and leading people to the conclusion that it's locally grown. And, you know, you really can't tell the difference between a yellow piece of patty pan squash grown in New Jersey versus one grown in Connecticut except for the season.
Well, I could tell the Holcomb Farm one. That's the, that
I'm sure
I would know.
Excellent. But yeah. But so that's a strong challenge for us to make sure that farmers that literally, you know, farmers are artists. It's not just a question of you put the seed in the ground, you water it, the sun comes out, and then it grows. It's a feel. It's a touch. It's something that, like the nice person here earlier said, you get to know your field by the time that the season is over, and then you apply that knowledge to next year. Well, that's an art form to do that. So we work very hard to make sure that those folks who have sweat blood to bring that crop in aren't somehow misrepresented.
Well, and maybe I can bring back in Jonathan and Charlotte from Sweet Acre Farm. Talk about the farmers markets that you work with, because it really is huge. It's a great way for farmers to get visibility, to get food directly to people. And I think, as George said, too, have a chance for people to know the people who are actually growing their food.
I think it's been great for our business and starting up. We've done the West End Farmers Market in Hartford for 3 years, the Storrs Farmers Market, and Coventry for the last 2 years. And it's great. We get a lot of exposure by being out there. We also sacrifice a lot of production time to be out there. Being gone 3 days a week marketing cuts into your production. And so,
that's something people don't understand, that this idea that it's not just, you know, you're not just farming and then sometimes they see you at the farmers. When you're at the farmers market, you're not farming. It's not like you've got a whole crew back there working.
Sometimes you do, but we don't. So it's a balance for us, and I think we're at a point in our business where we're looking to consolidate a lot of that marketing. You know, it's great that so many farmers markets are popping up around the state. It'd be great if everyone shopped at farmers markets and made them as vibrant as they could be, because it's hard for us to, you know, cobble together, you know, years worth of income in such a short time and have to, you know, scramble all over the state to make that happen.
Well, and maybe we can just talk about this, and any of the farmers up here can weigh in on this. I think it's really important. Look, you go to a farmers market, and if you're used to shopping at Stop and Shop, nothing against Stop and Shop, they're all over the place, but they get that produce from California, they get that produce from Florida, and many other places around the world. And it's going to cost less sometimes because of the model that they're using than the stuff that you're going to get at the farmer's market. Charlotte, what do you say to people when somebody comes up and say, you know, your carrots are more expensive than Stop and Shop's, why should I buy your carrots?
Whole different product, whole different, totally different piece of food right there. And I try and get really, you know, just, you know, I don't want to be in anyone's face about it, but it's so different than what they're getting at Stop and Shop. And it's not just, it's better for you, it's fresher. And you're having the experience of knowing who grew it. I mean, that's huge. And I don't just mean that, you know, it's nice to see a friendly face and talk to you, but we can build a relationship and have trust in each other about why we're doing what we're doing and really the reasons behind growing your own food and growing food for your community are so much bigger than huge production farms.
And I know, Karen, you have to have a lot of these same conversations too. You know, why would our CSA share cost a certain amount when I can go to the store and buy, you know, for that much less expensive a price? I mean, what do you tell people?
I mean, it is a different product. I mean, that is the first thing. But I mean, it's more than that. You're supporting a local farm. Your food hasn't been transported across the planet, really. I mean, that's a lot of petroleum that gets used. There's a lot of waste that goes into that. I mean, really, it's more than just that food that you're purchasing. Like, it's really an act of support. And I mean, and don't you want to have food that you could pick that morning and eat? I mean, that's a different experience at your dinner table, especially when you've gone to the farm and you've seen the place that came from. You're buying so much more than that produce. And that's really what I try and stress about it. But
yeah, Roger?
I think too, I mean, you get the, as a consumer, to be a part of a CSA program like they have at Holcomb Farm. You get to be literally be a part of the farm, you know, like you families bring their children here, you know, they have pick your own crops. Like, that's something you just can't put a price on.
Yeah, pick your own crops, getting a chance to go out there and actually see this. And again, farms like Holcomb Farm, you know, we could spend an entire hour just talking about the organic certification of things and how expensive that is. But the idea is the food grown here and the food grown on the farms that we're talking with here today are pesticide-free. These are products that are essentially done as well as they could possibly done. As George Crifter says, it's an art form. I know you wanted to jump in quickly.
Well, I just wanted to say that the answer to the question, why would you buy that carrot over the Stop and Shop carrot? It's a totally different carrot. It's a different kind of carrot. It's a different color carrot. You know, I've seen at farmers markets carrots that are situated to look like bouquets with different colors, and they're all different tastes. And you just can't buy that product at Stop and Shop.
Well,
at any price.
Yeah. Another thing to get into is earlier our friend Chris Brosberry from Metro Beast stopped by. We hear him on the Food Schmooze on Wednesdays. Karen, he gets his produce here. He gets his produce when you go to his restaurant. You actually are tasting these vegetables.
Yeah, that's right. He usually makes an effort to put our vegetables on the counter as soon as I show up.
Yeah, well, exactly. But this idea of farm to chef is something you guys are working on, making sure that these products get onto the tables at the best restaurants around the state.
And we've just completed a very successful Farm to Chef Week with over 80 restaurants and food service establishments over the state of Connecticut that have brought in product from everywhere in the state and used it to market their restaurant, which is very important.
So we just have a couple minutes left. What are some things about the farming life that people just don't understand? Jonathan, go ahead. What's something you want to tell people who aren't farmers about what it's like to be a farmer?
It's so hard. No, I'm sorry. it is hard, but it's not all, you know, it's not all fun and glamorous. Like, there is a reality check that most people don't have access to. I think that's something great that can be great about a CSA farm is that you can really get your hands dirty in it and know what that's like.
No, how about you, Charlotte?
I thought he was going to answer for both of us. I'll
let him answer for both of you. I want to thank you both so much for coming out from Hampton today, Jonathan Janeway and Charlotte Ross from Sweet Acre Farm in Hampton. Good to see you both. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, John.
Thanks also to Roger Phillips, who is a farmer with Sub Edge Farm in Farmington and Avon. He also works with the Hartford Food System. Roger, great to see you once again. What's something people should know about farmers?
Well, I think it's important to realize that to be a really good farmer, it takes a lifetime. To learn those skills. So I think everybody needs to try their best to support family farming.
And Karen Pettinelli, who's the farm manager of Holcomb Farm West Granby, thank you so much for having us out to the farm today. It is so great to see you, and it's great to celebrate this place that I really, really love a lot, and I get a lot of great food from you, so thank you.
Thanks, John.
I want to thank Jonathan Scranton and Garrett Connolly, who are our interns today. Kyle and Wolf took pictures of our program. Thanks to Jill Ford and all the friends of Holcomb Farm for helping us out today and making us so welcome. Tucker Ives produces the show. Katie Talarski is the senior producer of Where We Live, live from Holcomb Farm in West Granby. This is Where We Live.